You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
A lot of people, a lot of conservative people are looking at Bill C-51 and thinking, this is big government gone mad. This has a huge, unaccountable government spy bureaucracy. It's going to be wasting millions and millions in tax dollars and using taxpayer money essentially to spy on taxpayers who are simply engaged in democratic activities.
That's the voice of David Christopher from Open Media. On this week's show, we speak to David about the secretive dealings with the TPP, about the passing of C-51 and our civil liberties, and how we should assert our digital rights for the upcoming federal election. So stay tuned. Online, I have David Christopher. David is a communications manager at Open Media. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, in case our listeners don't know, what is Open Media and what is the main mandate of Open Media?
We're a community-based organization here in Canada, and we defend digital rights. So we try to safeguard the possibilities of the open internet here in Canada and also around the world.
Close to the last decade, we've had our Prime Minister changing many laws and doing many things that affect our civil liberties and telecommunication rights. Now, your organization has some major concerns with the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Can you talk about your concerns with this deal, which most Canadians probably haven't heard of or read?
I'd be happy to. You know, this government actually has a terrible track record across a wide swathe of digital rights issues, whether that's surveillance and spying on the internet, whether it's the failure to tackle the really ridiculous cell phone and internet prices, or whether indeed it is with regard to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The TPP, as it's known, it's basically a deal that encompasses Canada, the United States, and then 10 other countries across the kind of the Pacific Rim region of the world. Backers try to describe it as a trade deal, but it actually affects far more than just trade. There are rules in there that will affect your vast swathes of our everyday lives. And as internet freedom activists, we're especially concerned about the copyright chapter in the TPP. Essentially, it's been written for the benefit of giant media conglomerates down in Hollywood. But for everybody else, it's going to lead to a much more censored, policed, and an expensive internet service for all of us. It's got really extreme copyright proposals that could criminalize a lot of what people see as everyday sharing of information, sharing of news and videos and that sort of thing online could all actually be criminalized under the TPP. So it's going to really be shaping up as one of the major issues on which this election will be fought.
Our Prime Minister loves to talk about how many trade deals he signed with different nations. Canadians think of something like the TPP. They think this is just a regular job of government to negotiate this kind of deal. Could you give me some maybe specifics of everyday life that this deal could affect? And when you say affect our digital lives, can you give me an example of that?
Sure. I mean, it could be something, let's say you go off on holiday and then you post up a video on Facebook or YouTube of your holiday snapshot. Let's say you have a music playing in the background. You know, sometimes you put a top 40 song on there. And in theory, of course, you know, that song is copyrighted, but it's fair use given that it's only really going out to your friends on Facebook. That's an example of the kind of thing that could lead you into quite serious trouble. It could be criminalized. It could be fined under the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's kind of small, everyday things that people do without a second thought. And it could quite dramatically change how people use the internet. It's particularly worrying that the government, Stephen Harper's government, seems willing to sign away so many of our fundamental freedoms when it comes to these kind of issues, given that Canada has actually only recently been through a process when it comes to Canada's own copyright rules, you know, a process that had input from across the political spectrum, many different groups. We've come to, you know, we've arrived at a system that is perhaps not perfect, but it's certainly, you know, one of the more forward-thinking systems in the world in that it, you know, it encourages, we've got fairly broad scope for a fair use, fair dealing when it comes to copyright online at the moment. Those balanced Made in Canada rules could be completely overwritten if the TPP goes ahead. We actually had a major leak of this chapter of the TPP just a week ago, and the top you know, copyright analysts and experts in the country have looked over it and have really been quite shocked by the magnitude of the changes that are being proposed here. And of course, this is all happening behind your back. It's happening behind my back. It's happening behind the backs of your listeners and the backs of every Canadian, because these talks are taking place in an atmosphere of near total secrecy. Their public input has been completely excluded. The only people at the negotiating table, apart from government bureaucrats, are industry lobbyists, lobbyists for these giant conglomerates, especially for these U.S. Media interests. That's really where the fundamental problem with the TPP lies. And, you know, that applies whether it's you're concerned about internet censorship and copyright, or whether you're concerned with environmental issues, the impact on job creation, right, and the many, many other issues out there that will also be affected by the TPP. And, you know, one of the worst things is the government is supposed to be in a caretaker status. And now that the election's called, and they've actually changed the rules that will enable them now to continue negotiating this terrible deal, even in the midst of an election campaign.
It's incredible to me that they're negotiating a deal in the middle of an election campaign, and we know nothing about this deal. What would happen if a new government came into place and they already signed off on the TPP? Would the new government be able to just nullify it, or how would that work?
That's a really, really good question. And, you know, it's got some of the top constitutional experts kind of scratching their heads. Because, yes, on the one hand, full ratification of the TPP will need a vote in Parliament. Parliament isn't going to meet again until after the election. So in that sense, the TPP cannot be totally finalized until we get a new government in place. And that government, if it wanted to, could, you know, reject what had been agreed. But the real problem here is that the Conservative government could actually sign Canada up to any number of these, you know, deals in the TPP, so that by the time the new government came in place, their choice would be either take it or leave it. Either you take this pretty terrible deal or you reject it entirely. The problem, of course, is that it doesn't leave the new government any scope to renegotiate, any scope to negotiate, you know, according to what it sees as its priorities, as a newly elected government that's just received a mandate from the people of Canada. So that's really the problem here, is that we have what's now officially just a caretaker government. They're meant to be just, you know, keeping the machinery of government ticking over until the election. And instead we have them actively negotiating a really far-reaching deal that will impact our lives in any number of ways, and that by doing so, they will tie the hands of a future government. So if the Conservatives, even if they lose the election, they will have tied the hands of the new government to the point where it's just a take-it-or-leave-it scenario. And that's what's got a lot of people very worried indeed.
Open media as a policy isn't anti-trade. How would open media accept a deal like this? What would be a good scenario for Canada entering a trade deal? How would you like to see it done differently?
Oh, I think you're quite right to say, you know, we're a digital rights, an internet freedom organization, so that's very much where we keep our focus. Though, of course, we definitely respect the fact that vast numbers of other groups, you know, environmentalists, many, many other groups around the country have other concerns with the TPP. So, you know, that's something I think that's shared pretty broadly. For us specifically, it really is about being, people must be able to share and collaborate freely online, without being worried that they're going to get sued, without being worried that they're going to get fined ridiculous amounts of money simply for doing something like sharing a YouTube video with their friends on Facebook. We really need to keep the internet as a free forum for communication. The great thing about the internet is that it brings us all together, lets us all communicate really easily with one another. And I think anything that gets in the way of that, anything that makes the internet more policed and more censored, because, you know, for one example, the TPP could mean internet providers actually having to take down websites from the internet. So you could see if the TPP does go through, it will make the internet a much poorer place. And we really think, given the leak that we had just a week ago, that that whole chapter, that whole intellectual property chapter really needs a radical rethink. And it's very difficult to see how changes could be made in the next few weeks that could make it, I think, acceptable for Canadian internet users. Of course, you know, we'll be keeping up the pressure and working to, and, you know, encouraging certainly Canada's government and the other governments to stand up for internet freedom in these last few weeks of talks.
So you believe maybe something like this interview could be taken down from my website if the TPP is, would it be that extreme?
It would depend if the copyright claim was made against you. And let's say it could be something like a jingle that you used at the start that maybe you didn't fully check you had the rights to or something like that. Something like that, yes, indeed, could be used to take down content from the internet. It could be something really minor that at the moment would qualify as simply it's fair dealing under current Canadian law. Okay. But the TPP is so extreme that it could lead to those kind of scenarios. It's also quite worrying that there's beginning to be more and more of a track record, especially in the States, of where copyright law is actually being used for political reasons to silence you know, critics of government policy, that sort of thing. The TPP would only give more ammunition to people who wanted to abuse copyright rules in that way to silence views and opinions with which they disagree. So, you know, if this deal does go through, it will make the internet a poorer place, but it will also harm and undermine the quality of democratic debate in our country as well.
Now, you mentioned lobbyists earlier. Now, as you are well aware, we have a few massive communications companies, they call them oligopolies, that run the whole marketplace. Can you talk to your campaign to maybe open up the cell phone market and have better rates and unlocking our phones and these kind of things?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the TPP is one big priority for us in this election, but the whole issue, sky-high cell phone prices, sky-high internet bills, Canadians, especially in rural areas, on First Nations and northern communities, being left really with internet that should have, you know, been improved 15, 20 years ago. Very slow connections, unreliable connections, incredibly expensive costs for consumers in rural areas. And a lot of these problems all trace themselves back to the one really big problem, which, as you quite rightly point out, is the dominance of our telecom market by just this tiny handful of absolutely massive, overpowerful conglomerates that are controlling not just cell phone service and internet service, but also many of our mainstream media, private media companies as well. So, you know, we've worked with Canadians over, I think, several hundred thousand people in total have taken part in various crowdsourcing processes that we've been running over the last few years, because we know it's really important that we push forward a positive alternative to the kind of dysfunctional, broken telecom market that we have at the moment. We've come up with a solid crowdsourced plan for the wireless market that would open it up, create a level playing field for the smaller, more affordable cell phone companies that are trying to make space for themselves, that would take on the monopoly or the oligopoly of the big three wireless companies and really open the network so that everyone gets a shake and so that we finally get prices start to go down for Canadian wireless customers. It's a sort of a similar situation as well when it comes to fixed internet, broadband access, and especially the next generation of super fast fiber internet. You know, we had Bell announce a new fiber internet plan just a couple of days ago, and it's ridiculous. One analyst I was reading says it's about one of the worst propositions anywhere in the world. You're talking $150 for fiber internet that's actually got down upload caps, caps on the amount of usage people can use. It's ridiculous when you look at what's happening in the States and even here in Canada, where you've got municipalities taking the power into their own hands at a local level, building their own fiber networks, and then charging their residents a small fraction. You know, there's one town in the U.S. where you can get gigabit internet for just $60 a month. So Canada's clearly falling really far behind when it comes to high-speed internet on the one side, but also when you look at just getting basic internet service, a basic 25 megabits internet service out to our rural and northern areas. We've fallen so far behind. This government has shown an appalling lack of ambition when it comes to its digital strategy. And this government just simply doesn't seem to get it because investments that we make in our internet infrastructure today will empower communities at a local level right across this country and will be paying off many times over in terms of the economic benefits that they deliver to Canada over the you know, next 20, 25 years, really for generations to come. So we really want to see a government come in that's truly committed to delivering affordable, accessible, world-class internet and cell phone service for all Canadians.
You know, it really makes me angry because when you think of how originally the Bell Network or the Stentor companies were set up, they were set up with mass public subsidies and given monopoly status, and then they turn around and give us some of the worst rates in the world. How are we standing up when it comes to, I guess, comparing us to other G8 countries?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, this government from Stephen Harper on down has promised to lower wireless prices. The verdict is in. There was an official government report a couple of weeks ago came out saying, you know, cell phone prices are still sky high here in Canada. We're among the most expensive, certainly in the industrialized world, even more expensive than the U.S., which is also one of the more expensive countries. You know, to put things in perspective, I was off on holiday back in the UK recently. Over there, you can get a monthly plan with a gigabyte of cell phone internet data for the equivalent of about $20 a month. And you know, it's the same across many European countries. It's the same across many East Asian countries. You know, here you can't get a plan like that for anything south of $50, really. So it does show we've a long way to go. This government has failed. You know, they've promised to lower cell phone prices. Their own official wall report has confirmed that's not the case. Prices are going up at three times the rate of inflation. The government may have taken a few sort of steps in the right direction, but nowhere near enough, nowhere near the kind of the sea change in policy that Canadians deserve to start getting these prices down. Because, you know, they're holding back. This sort of thing is really holding back our tech sector, and it's holding back small businesses as well, right across the country, being forced to pay often, you know, two or three times as much as their counterparts in European countries, for example. So we just can't go on like this. We need a government that's actually determined to tackle this problem, not just make promises and then fail to deliver.
No, you're quite right. I was in El Salvador last year for 3 weeks, and I was able to pick up a cell phone and complete plan for $15 in a country that has suffered so many, you know, civil wars and problems. But I was able to pick up a phone for about half the price I can in Canada. Your organization has spoke up loudly against Bill C-51. Now, this government claims there's a lot of new threats in the world and that it's trying to keep Canadians safe. Can you speak to some of your concerns with the passing of Bill C-51?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely. And, you know, I think of all the issues, this is probably one of the ones that really will play a decisive role in the election. You know, the government are trying to claim, and have been since the start, really, that Bill C-51 is needed to keep people safe from terrorism and this sort of thing. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the top security experts, the top privacy experts in the country have looked over this and have concluded that it's grossly disproportionate. It's an onslaught on really some of the most fundamental rights to privacy and rights to free expression and freedom of travel that Canadians enjoy through the Charter. It's very large parts of this bill are clearly unconstitutional under the Charter. It's clearly heading already facing a Charter challenge in the courts. And it's also proven to be hugely unpopular. One of the most recent polls I've seen says 56% are against it. Only about 1 in 3 are in favor, perhaps the sort of the conservative base, but many, many grassroots conservatives are also completely against this kind of attack on people's fundamental rights and freedoms. And it's clearly been a big issue. It's only 6 months ago since the Liberals were either leading or second place in the polls. And then they made the decision to, the misguided decision to actually back this reckless legislation, whereas we've seen parties like the NDP and the Greens, smaller parties like the Libertarians, come out against it. And this has really damaged the Liberals. It's probably one of the single biggest reasons why the Liberals are now back in third place. The NDP seem to be doing pretty well, according to the polls. And it's because, you know, it's like a reward because they did actually listen to the concerns of Canadians on Bill C-51. I think it'll be very interesting to see. You know, Mr. Trudeau is promising some kind of modest reforms to C-51. He finally admitted in the debate last week that he was naive, his words, to have backed the bill. But what he hasn't done is come out with specifics about how he plans to overturn and repeal the bad bits. So the bill itself, pretty much the whole bill is bad. So really, I think Canadians deserve nothing less than a commitment to fully and completely repeal this legislation and to really go back to the drawing board and actually consult Canadians about how Canadians want to balance these kind of issues going forward.
No, I feel that Pierre Trudeau would turn over in his grave if he knew the Liberal Party and his son supported such anti-liberty, civil liberties legislation now.
Oh, it's shocking. And, you know, I vividly remember the day that this was voted on in the House of Commons. And the look on the Liberal MPs' faces when they were, because they all had to get up and stand up and vote for this bill. And I was barely a single one of them looked comfortable doing so. They looked incredibly uncomfortable. And I think they know that this was a real betrayal of the founding principles of their party. And I reckon, you know, they're going to pay the price at the election unless they turn around and promise to repeal this before it's too late.
You touched on something, too, that conservatives are kind of tacitly supporting it, but I would think this would be a natural thing they wouldn't support because they're against the long-gun registry. They're against any kind of government record-keeping. So can you speak about how conservatives might backlash against such kind of limiting legislation?
Oh, yeah, I mean, this has been one of the most, fascinating elements of this whole debate is that we've really seen this divide open up between sort of Stephen Harper and perhaps the leadership of the Conservative Party vis-a-vis the grassroots Conservatives on the ground across the country. A lot of people, a lot of Conservative people are looking at Bill C-51 and thinking, this is big government gone mad. This power is a huge, unaccountable government spy bureaucracy. It's going to be wasting millions and millions in tax dollars and using taxpayer money essentially to spy on taxpayers who are simply engaged in democratic activity. So I think really when any real conservative gives some thought to this, they realize that this is really anathema to core conservative principles. And that's why we've seen so many people like Connie Fournier of Free Dominion, from the sort of the grassroots conservative community, speaking up so strongly, helping to organize rallies, getting a lot of media attention around the fact that a lot of grassroots conservatives are really unhappy about this deal. And clearly the conservatives are going to lose some of their core vote because of this, because, you know, the thing about C-51 is a lot of these issues that we talk about, it's, you know, there's dozens of issues that are going to be discussed between now and the election, but this really is one of the big ones. You know, I would imagine this will be one of the top three going into election day, because it is so fundamental. It touches on the core rights and freedoms that Canadians have, and that in itself, you know, I think affects what people think it is to be a Canadian. When you look at how much the charter itself is tied up with Canadian identity, I think that's why this huge threat to the charter, threat to people's rights and freedoms, it's really resonating out there. It's resonating among grassroots conservatives, liberals, NDPers, Greens, people who don't support any party. It's really resonating as an issue. And I think all the parties are clearly going to be campaigning pretty hard on this. But like I say, it seems like it's really only the NDP and the Greens, smaller parties like the Libertarians. I know there are others as well who have come out, clearly committed themselves to fully repealing the bill. And that, I think, is what voters will be expecting and making decisions on as we come closer to election day.
We're coming close to the end of our interview. Can you tell our listeners how they can support Open Media and get involved?
The best way right now is check out our website at openmedia.ca. We'll actually be launching our election pledge next week, and are unveiling our full election platform. That's a crowdsourced platform. It's all based on ideas from people around the country. So I'd encourage people, keep in touch with us at openmedia.ca. We've also got a really lively Facebook page and a really lively Twitter feed as well. So people are more than welcome to come and join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter as well. And, you know, certainly you'll be hearing more from us as we go over the next few weeks and as this election campaign, I think, really starts to pick up steam going into September.
You know, our digital lives are a big part of our democracy. They're a big part of our day-to-day lives. Any final thoughts that Canadians should be thinking about going into this election? Any final advice?
Yes, I think digital issues are becoming more and more important as more and more of us come online and are connected with each other. It's also striking how much digital issues connect with the other issues that people are concerned about. You know, we talked about how C-51 connects with people's whole idea of what it is to be Canadian, of the kind of the rights and the freedoms that involves. But equally, you could talk about investing in our internet infrastructure, investing in making sure that every northern community, First Nations community in the country has world-class internet access. Think of the economic benefits, the benefits to our economy that will bring over the generations to come, really. And you can see that these issues, you know, they're not sort of to one side in their own box. They're interwoven with pretty much everything that we do in our day-to-day lives here now. And so it's really important, I think, that we get enough people to speak up, if we get enough people to pledge to vote based on these issues, we can actually get the politicians to start listening to us and to promise to implement this our crowdsourced plans should they get elected in October.
Thank you so much for speaking with us and taking some of your valuable time, and hopefully we'll do this again soon.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations, and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you, and bye for now.